Hello, welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Saturday, October 23, 2021. I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette today, schools struggle to get cafeteria staples. This story by Grace King. Beef, chicken, breakfast pizza and waffles, bread, fruits and vegetables, and paper products are just a few of the items Iowa school districts are struggling to get so they can provide varied and quality meals to students. Schools are making changes to their breakfast and lunch menus nearly weekly to account for items that are delayed or unavailable, said Allison Demery, Iowa City Schools Nutrition Services Director. If we saw the light at the end of the tunnel, we might feel a little better, Demery said. A few items might be available again in January, but we're not sure. I've heard this isn't going to go away anytime soon. Schools across the country are scrambling to feed students with a continued shortage of cafeteria staples. Staffing shortages at food manufacturers and distributors are making it challenging to make and transport enough products to meet the demand, Demery said. Some items can be ordered in a limited quantity only, which may not meet the needs of the Iowa City District, serving 9,000 meals daily. If we can only order two cases of a product at a time, that's a problem, Demery said. We have to work ahead over multiple weeks to order things in advance, so we have enough of them when the item comes up on the menu. Instead of providing individual bags of chips, the district is purchasing bulk orders and portioning them out to students, which requires more preparation, Demery said, giving an example of how the supply chain shortages can cause more work down the line. We're doing all the work we can behind the scenes so our families and students don't notice, but it is a tremendous amount of work, Demery said. It requires a lot more work to source items to continue to have a compelling menu that kids want to come eat. Last month, the U.S. Department of Agriculture said it was aware that some schools are experiencing challenges purchasing and obtaining food for their meal programs around the nation and was taking action to help. In addition to devoting more money to buy commodities for the lunch programs, the USDA said it would not penalize schools if they can't meet meal standards for now due to supply chain issues. Cedar Rapids schools have had to substitute products but are able to offer similar items to maintain the quality and integrity of our meals, said Jennifer Hook, Cedar Rapids Schools Food and Nutrition Department Manager. Every week, more items are being temporarily discontinued. As manufacturers struggle to obtain ingredients and manage staff shortages, said Jenny Scott, College Community Director of Nutritional Services. Entire menu days have had to be switched until the next delivery can be made, Scott said. Marion Independent, Mount Vernon, and Clear Creek Amana are a few other local districts also having trouble getting products. Clear Creek Amana still is chasing the food supply chain, adjusting menus to fit when food is available, said Lori Hammond, Communication Director. It is a big struggle for our food and nutrition director. I wish I could report that it had gotten better, but it has not, Hammond said in an email. Mount Vernon schools put in weekly orders for food. Items are often flagged as possibly not being available, said Greg Battenhorst, Mount Vernon superintendent. We're watching this carefully, and students and parents need to be prepared for changes to the menu with little notice, depending on how the supply chain holds up, Battenhorst said. Also on the front page today, this reminder, 10-digit dialing for 319 and 515 area codes starts Sunday. The change makes way for 988 suicide hotline, and this story is by Michaela Ram. Starting Sunday, Iowans in the 319 and 515 area codes will need to dial all 10 digits of a phone number to make a call. The new requirement from the Federal Communications Commission makes way for 988, a new three-digit number that will connect callers to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline starting in July 2022. The two Iowa area codes, which include Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Waterloo, and Des Moines, include some phone numbers that use 988 as the prefix in seven-digit phone numbers. The national change will affect 82 area codes in 32 states. Starting Sunday, calls made without the area code may not go through. Instead, callers will hear a recorded reminder to dial phone numbers with the area code. Local mental health providers previously told the Gazette that people are more likely to remember three-digit numbers, such as 911 or 211. So if they ever face a crisis, advocates hope more people will reach out for help by calling the 988 hotline. If you're having a mental health crisis or you're feeling suicidal, you might not remember the 10-digit 800 number, but 988 is pretty easy to remember. Emily Blum, executive director of Foundation 2 in Cedar Rapids, told the Gazette. It's also hoped the hotline will help decrease the stigma around mental health. In the meantime, people can reach the National Suicide Prevention Hotline by calling 1-800-273-TALK. Also on the front page of this story, from an AP source in Des Moines, Iowa court accusations against doctors are secret. Iowa doctors accused of doing something dangerous or inappropriate could keep the allegations private and out of the hands of patients until a regulatory board makes a final determination and issues a report, according to the state Supreme Court decision, which was issued on Friday. In its unanimous decision, the court said the Iowa Board of Medicine should not have publicly disclosed information about a doctor under investigation, as was the standard procedure for the agency. Its ruling likely will lead to changes in how dozens of other licensing boards handle complaints. Read in its entirety, we do not believe the statute is ambiguous. Investigative information cannot be released to the public prior to a final decision in a disciplinary proceeding, Justice Edward Mansfield wrote. Iowa Freedom of Information Council Executive Director Randy Evans called the decision disappointing and said he hopes the Iowa legislature revises the statute to benefit the public. Those facts and circumstances need full and timely disclosure to patients and consumers so they can make an informed selection of a treating physician, he said. The court ruled in the case of Dr. Domenico Calcaterra, a cardiothoracic surgeon who formerly practiced in Iowa City but now practices in another state. The Iowa Board of Medicine in 2013 considered allegations of disruptive behavior and unethical or unprofessional misconduct. The board issued a news release with information about the allegations, which Calcaterra has long denied. Ultimately, the board settled the complaint in 2014, with Calcaterra agreeing to accept a citation, a warning, and a $5,000 civil penalty without admitting wrongdoing. The board detailed the settlement in another news release, which was posted on its website and which repeated the allegations. Calcaterra's attorney, Trent Nelson, said Calcaterra has suffered because of the accusations and noted that there has never been a concern about our client's competence of patient care. Calcaterra sought to get the information removed in 2018, but the board declined, saying its administrative rules have long provided that statements of charges are public record. In April 2020, a state court judge reversed the board, concluding Iowa law clearly prohibits the disclosure of investigative information before a regulatory board's final written decision. The law in question applies to more than 30 other licensing boards, including those regulating nurses and pharmacists, dentists, foot doctors, psychologists, eye doctors, veterinarians, and plumbers. The ruling reverses decades-old policies for the disclosure of information to the public about such professionals under investigation. The court said it doesn't need to abide by long-standing rules if they conflict with a state law. Mansfield wrote that the court doesn't discount the need for transparency in government and acknowledges the public may find value in having information about a professional when a complaint is filed with a licensing board. Yet, he wrote, in addition, a professional's livelihood can be damaged by putting unproved allegations in public view on an official government website. It is the legislature's role to balance these considerations, not ours. Lynn Hicks, a spokesperson for the Iowa Attorney General's Office, which represented the Iowa Board of Medicine, said state lawyers are evaluating the ruling and will be working with licensing boards to determine next steps. Nelson, Calcaterra's attorney, said the decision restores protections for professionals that have been ignored by licensing boards for decades. This ends the practice of licensing boards of publishing unvetted and often inaccurate allegations before the licensee has even had the opportunity to defend themselves to see the evidence against them, Nelson said. Turning now to top stories on the Today page, procession honors trooper killed in a crash. Public funeral service set for Wednesday at Waukon High School. Scores of people paid their respects Friday to Trooper Ted Benda, who was killed in a northeast Iowa crash earlier this month as his body was escorted to a Waukon funeral home. The Iowa Department of Public Safety provided the escort from the State Medical Examiner's Office in Ankeny to Waukon as people lined segments of the route to honor Benda. A public visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Tuesday at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Waukon. A public funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday at Waukon High School with Father John Mosier officiating, according to Martin Grau Funeral Home, which is handling the arrangements. A private burial will follow in Waukon. Benda, age 37, of Near Decorah, died Wednesday, nearly a week after the crash. Authorities said he was driving at high speed about 11:30 p.m. October 14 while rushing to assist the Clayton County Sheriff's Office with a call when he crashed on Highway 51, about 6 miles north of Postville. Benda was airlifted to Gunderson Lutheran Hospital in La Crosse, Wisconsin, where he died. Benda had been with the Iowa State Patrol since 2016 and before that with the Division of Criminal Investigation since 2005. He leaves behind his wife, Holly, and 4 young children, the State Patrol reported. And Iowa City police know who shot the Marine, believe it was unintentional. It's incredible that he survived. This story by Vanessa Miller. Officers investigating a Sunday night shooting in South Iowa City that has a 20-year-old Marine fighting for his life have identified a person they suspect to be responsible for the driver's injury and believe the shooting was unintentional. Police, who are continuing to investigate, haven't arrested the person they suspect is responsible, but noted there is no threat to public safety. At 6:37 p.m. Sunday, officers found Gabriel Hefner with a gunshot wound to the head and unconscious in his vehicle, which had crashed into a median west of Highway 6 and Sycamore Street. He was the only person in the car. His father, Niall Hefner, told the Gazette on Friday that his son is fighting for his life in intensive care and remains in critical condition. He thanked Iowa City Police for their work to find out what happened to his son and to keep the community safe. "We do hope there is some justice that can be done for my son for this careless, senseless act," he said. Gabriel, who goes by Gabe, was born in Iowa City where his parents grew up. The family moved to Missouri 8 years after Gabe was born, and Gabe was in town over the weekend visiting his grandparents, according to Niall Hefner. Gabe had driven to grab food at Panda Express while his grandparents were at a church group, and his father said police suspect he was shot somewhere before reaching Sycamore Street. "Just one bullet hit my son, went through his temple in his brain, and he's fighting to stay alive," Niall Hefner said in a previous interview with the Gazette. Gabe, who joined the Marine Corps in February, graduated top of his class as a Lance Corporal and was planning to head to Okinawa, Japan this month for a 3-year stint in the communications field. According to a GoFundMe.com page for the Marine, which as of Friday had raised $40,000, police called his parents at about 6:45 p.m. and told them their son had been in a car accident. They learned more once they arrived at the hospital. At the scene of the crash, according to the page, Gabe was able to tell first responders his name and speak in complete sentences. Though his sentences weren't making sense, according to the page, he was able to respond to commands on his right side. Things went downhill later that evening, and doctors ended up having to remove part of the left side of his skull to allow for swelling in the brain. According to the page, doctors report it is incredible that he survived and he could talk and respond upon entrance to the trauma center. Now it is just a waiting game to see how he responds once he gains full consciousness. In another Iowa Today story, the state awards tax credits to a Cedar Rapids housing project, this by Marissa Payne. The Iowa Economic Development Authority on Friday awarded $1.5 million in tax credits to fuel the redevelopment of two downtown Cedar Rapids housing projects. Together, the projects will add 84 housing units. The first proposal from developer Steve Emerson will convert the upper floors of the Iowa building, 211 4th Avenue Southeast, into downtown housing units. The state will give $750,000 in tax credits to the project. The Iowa building is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The IEDA in September also awarded $975,559 in workforce housing tax credits toward its redevelopment. Another Emerson development also will receive $750,000 in tax credits to convert the old Skogman Realty headquarters at 411 First Avenue Southeast into the Palmer Building housing development. The redevelopment tax credits are for projects on brownfield and grayfield sites. Grayfield sites are abandoned public, industrial, or commercial properties that are vacant, blighted, obsolete, or otherwise underutilized. The properties have infrastructure in place, but their current use is outdated or prevents a more efficient use of the site. We are grateful that the state chose the Palmer and Iowa buildings for the Brownfield Grayfield program, Emerson said in a news release. Revitalizing and repurposing buildings is a costly endeavor and would not be possible without help from state programs like these to fill construction cost gaps, he said. We are excited and hopeful that our projects will increase the foot traffic in downtown Cedar Rapids and help our downtown businesses thrive. Both projects also are supported with the city's standard incentive package. City Economic Development Manager Caleb Basin said, which for housing projects is a 10-year, 100% tax exemption or reimbursement. These funding streams are critical to getting these historic projects off the ground, Cedar Rapids City Manager Pomerantz said. These are two very good opportunities for new downtown housing in Cedar Rapids, he added. Both are of historic importance to the downtown area, and it will be very positive to see them developed for housing opportunities. Doug Newman, Executive Director of the Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance, said in a statement that the projects represent significant investment in our vibrant downtown community. The tax incentives from the state will lead to $21 million in construction and development for the city, not to mention increased housing, which is sorely needed in our downtown area, Newman said. The IEDA awarded a total of $15 million in tax credits statewide on Friday, including the Webb Acres Gala Barn Project, located on the site of the former Iowa Braille School in Vinton. And iconic garden space opens. This story by Philip Sitter from the Ames Tribune. Sycamore Falls, a new space at Ryman Gardens in Ames, has been a long time coming, but the gardens director says the new area, which features a waterfall, stream, and nightlit tower, will be a place people talk about. Ed Lyon also said he hopes Sycamore Falls will be the iconic garden space that people will associate with the attraction. Lyon said the garden's Christina Ryman butterfly wing has come closest to holding that status, but that the gardens have lacked a signature piece at the far end to entice visitors to walk all the way through. Sycamore Falls sits on about 3 acres of land tucked in a peninsula of green between University Boulevard, Beach Avenue, and Mortenson Parkway. The area is named after the row of seven approximately 80-year-old sycamore trees that line the adjacent University Boulevard. Lyon said the land used to be pseudo-prairie that was difficult to maintain. What was once gravel paths now is wooden boardwalk and paved paths around the pond and a stream, all of which are lined with varieties of evergreens, grasses, and blooming annuals and perennials. Lyon said picking plants for a new space like Sycamore Falls involves purpose, such as picking non-turf grasses for a steep embankment that show people lawn alternatives, having plants people haven't seen before, complementing the space's design, and having plants that the wind will catch to create sound and movement. While the relatively flat stones lining the stream do look inviting to walk on, Lyon said they aren't meant to be and are just decorative. All the paths around the pond and stream lead to a wooden and steel tower that sits atop a platform 9 feet above the rest of the space. The waterfall flows down from that elevated platform at the back. "It's been stressful getting this to this part," Lyon said of the project, admitting that at times he could not see the end in sight. He said planning for Sycamore Falls started in 2015. The land was cleared in 2017. There was a redesign that year, and the project ultimately took 2 years longer to complete than expected. Stress might wash away, however, staring up into the tower, which is designed to evoke looking up into a forest clearing. Lyon said the tower was inspired by a chapel at Powell Gardens near Kansas City, Missouri. Sycamore Falls' $3.4 million budget was paid for by donors, Lyon said, with half coming from the Roy and Bobby Ryman, the garden's main benefactors. "There's no extra cost to visitors to see Sycamore Falls," Lyon said. "The falls also will not be rented out for events unless they're after hours. This needs to be publicly accessible," he said. Turning now to the Insight page, the guest column and editorial today is by Paul Pate, and the title is "Make Your Voice Heard, November 2. You might be surprised to learn that the upcoming city and school election may have a bigger impact on your daily life than who is elected president, senator, or governor. While races for those higher offices receive greater attention, the locally elected officials play a more direct and immediate role in your community. I believe voting is the best way to make our voice heard and make a difference in society. The United States of America is the greatest and freest country in the world because we give citizens the power to choose their elected leaders and form of government. As Abraham Lincoln famously said in his Gettysburg Address, we are a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Do not ignore the power and responsibility that lies in your hands. Learn about the candidates on the ballot on November 2 and exercise your civic duty by voting for the ones that best resemble your values. This is a time of great unrest in our society. School board and city council meetings are often devolving into shouting matches. It seems every issue we face becomes a partisan battle. Politics clouds everything today. There is an easy solution. Instead of pointing fingers and raising voices, vote. Instead of arguing endlessly on social media, vote. Instead of wishing for a better world, change it yourself. Vote. Countless Americans fought and died for our right to choose our representative republic. You can honor them November 2 by voting. My office and Iowa's 99 county auditors will honor them and honor you by ensuring your vote is safe and secure. Remember, if you requested an absentee ballot through the mail, your county auditor must receive the ballot by November 2. You can vote in person at your county auditor's office through November 1. If you prefer to go to the polls on Election Day, they will be open 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Make sure to bring your voter ID. For more information, visit voterready.iowa.gov. city and school elections are about you, your family, and your community. Please make your vote heard on November 2. Vote. And again, that's by Paul Pate. Paul is Iowa's Secretary of State and Commissioner of Elections. And the guest column today is titled, Conservative Budgeting Works in Iowa. President Joe Biden and Democrats could learn a lesson from Governor Kim Reynolds. Iowa ended fiscal 2021 with a $1.24 billion surplus. Last year, Iowa's surplus was $305 million. Since assuming office, Reynolds has pursued a policy of prudent budgeting and pro-growth tax reform that has kept Iowa's fiscal house in strong and stable condition. Truth in Accounting, which has recently released its Financial State of the States 2021 report, ranks Iowa in the top 10 of fiscally stable states. Iowa's economy has recovered from the pandemic-triggered downturn because of Reynolds and the Republican legislature following a policy of fiscal conservatism. Even heading into the pandemic, Iowa's fiscal state was orderly thanks to wise budgeting. In addition to a $1.24 billion surplus, there's plenty of money available in the reserves, including a combined $817.9 million in the Cash Reserve Fund and the Economic Emergency Fund, and $1.054 billion in the Taxpayer Relief Fund. In 2018, the legislature passed a comprehensive tax reform measure that began to lower both the individual and corporate income tax rates. The legislation also broadened the sales tax base, which helped lead to better-than-expected sales tax revenue during the pandemic. Iowa was one of 11 states that enacted tax reform this year, a crucial component of the 2021 tax reform law. Besides phasing out the inheritance tax, was eliminating the income tax triggers that were put in place in 2018 to lower the income tax. Now that the triggers are to be eliminated in 2023, the top rate will fall to 6.5%, and the individual income tax brackets will condense from 9 to 4 brackets with the bottom rate of 4.4%. In 2022, the Iowa legislature will have an opportunity to build on previous tax reforms. Priority should be placed on lowering the individual and corporate income tax and addressing high property taxes. When signing the 2021 tax reform bill into law, Reynolds stated, "We are not done yet." Reynolds has even stated that the ultimate goal is to eliminate Iowa's income tax. The governor understands that Iowa is in competition with other states for both jobs and people. Iowa cannot become complacent as other states lower tax rates. Fiscal conservatism is working in Iowa, and a $1.24 billion surplus is evidence that keeping spending low and reducing tax rates leads to economic prosperity. Iowa can look to states such as North Carolina, Indiana, among others, that have successfully reduced tax rates. Spending is at the heart of tax policy, and if policymakers continue to keep spending low, Iowa taxpayers see greater tax relief. The Des Moines Register released a new poll that shows a 53% job approval rating for Governor Reynolds. The governor's approval rating is even higher, 57%, when respondents are asked how she has handled Iowa's economy. The poll confirms that Iowa supports the conservative pro-growth policy agenda that Reynolds is advancing in Iowa. Iowa offers the proof that you cannot tax and spend your way to prosperity. And again, this was submitted by John Hendrickson, who is Policy Director of Tax Education Foundation of Iowa, a public policy think tank. Two letters to the editor today. Grassley is no George Bailey. Watching Senator Chuck Grassley with Donald Trump in Des Moines called to mind a great scene from the film It's a Wonderful Life. George Bailey is called into the office of town bully, scoundrel, money-grabbing banker Mr. Potter. George has stood up to Potter multiple times, called him out for his cheating, greed, and disdain for the rabble who does most living, working, and dying around here. Potter charms him, compliments him, and offers him $20,000 a year to be on his team. George is shocked. Potter's gift cigar drops from George's mouth as he digests Potter's offer of trips, the biggest house in town, fancy clothes for his wife. George hesitates. Potter finally says, "Confound it, Bailey, do we have a deal or not?" George reluctantly shakes his head. Our hero quickly realizes he's about to make a deal with the devil, wipes his hand on his shirt to remove the stench, and tells Potter off in fine fashion and slams the door on the way out. Alas, Chuck, you kept shaking his hand. You embraced the man you knew was guilty of lie after lie after lie. You knew. You are no George Bailey. And that is signed by Ted Warnament in Coralville. Our second letter is titled, Hinson Stands Up to Snooping. President Joe Biden and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's plan to pay for their $4.3 trillion spending proposal is to snoop in our bank accounts for any transactions over a certain level, initially $600 and now $10,000, and I'm outraged. To put it plainly, the government doesn't need to know every time Iowans get paid or want to pay for groceries, electronics, or rent. This is unbelievable abuse of power, and weaponizing the IRS will create widespread distrust in our community credit unions and banks. How far does one administration have to go to invade your privacy? They plan to use this information to try to identify unreported taxable income. They are trying to use your money to increase the size of the IRS and fund their socialist policies. I'd be hard-pressed to believe that most Democrats have read everything in their spending packages, yet many want to know every detail about every time my family spend money. I'm proud that U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson is leading the charge in Congress with a bill to stop this massive government overreach and spotlight the Democrats' mixed-up priorities. With the growing list of issues that our nation faces, including a major safety and security crisis at the border, it's absurd that Biden and Pelosi would prioritize funding more IRS agents instead of more Border Patrol. And that's signed by Victoria Freese of Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Saturday, October 23, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituary page. In the short notices from Decorah, Officer Ted Benda, 37, died Wednesday, October 20th, Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon. From Maquoketa, James, known as Jim Kinraid, age 86, died Thursday, October 21, Carson Celebration of Life Center, Maquoketa. And in Maquoketa, Vera, known as Tootie Mettinger, age 98, died Wednesday, October 20. Carson Celebration of Life Center, Maquoketa. Turning now to the regular notices from Cedar Rapids, David William Dutton, age 51, passed away Tuesday, October 19, at the Allen Memorial Hospital in Waterloo, following a long battle with MS. David is survived by his parents, and no information for services included in his notice. He was preceded in death by both sets of grandparents. From Iowa City, Mary Pauline Stimmel passed away Thursday, October 21. Mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 26th at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Cosgrove with Father Robert Close officiating. Burial will be at St. Peter's Cemetery. The rosary will be recited at 3:30 p.m. Monday at Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City, followed by a time of sharing for family and friends. The rosary and the sharing time may be viewed by way of Zoom. The link is under the tribute wall on Mary's obituary page at lansingfuneral.com. Visitation will follow from 4 to 6 p.m. at the funeral home. From Williamsburg, Karen M. Bischoff Ramsey, age 82, passed away at her home Wednesday, October 20. Funeral service will be at 10 a.m. Monday, October 25 at Trinity United Church of Christ, rural Marengo, with Pastor Tim Miller officiating. Burial will be at Genoa Bluff Cemetery, rural Marengo. Visitation is 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Sunday, October 24 at Kloster Funeral Home. Memorials may be contributed to the family in Karen's name. And lastly, from Cedar Rapids, Joyce Karen Hardiman, devoted wife, mother, and grandmother, passed away October 18. A funeral service celebrating Joyce's life will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 26th at Emmanuel Baptist Church, 1900 F Avenue Northwest in Cedar Rapids, with the Reverend Dan Wiersema officiating. Burial will be at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery following church services. A visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. October 25 at Cedar Memorial Funeral Home. Turning now to the sports page, this high school football story, Lions Share the Scoring Wealth. This by Jeff Johnson. They've had 10 different players score touchdowns this season. 11 guys have scored points from a Class A football team. This has been a true collective effort without question for the Lisbon Lions. They're ranked fourth, went 7-1 in the regular season, and hosted a first-round playoff game Friday night against Bellevue because of it. "We've played pretty good ball," said Lisbon coach Phil Whitman. "We're still learning, and that's the name of the game. Continue to get better every week, and I think we've done that so far. Whether it be some really good opponents like Wapello that we've faced, or even week three with Alburnett, when we knew we were going to play tough, they're coached really well. And even last week with Starmont, they were a physical team, and we knew that going in. We've had to rise to the occasion every game and continue to work hard to get better. I think our kids have done a pretty good job of that. Now, back to the whole TD by committee thing. Lisbon had 6 different ball carriers pick up at least one of them in the regular season. The leaders were Gavin Wollum with 9 and Jamian Moore with 8. Wollum's 81 carries led the team, as did Max Cole's 471 yards. Again, that's not many, especially for a good club. Aiden Hansen didn't have a rushing touchdown but had 5 receiving. Will Bennett and Matthias Cole are other players who had TD receptions instead of rushing. "Our offense has come a long ways," Whitman said. "We run a little option stuff. We run a 2-quarterback system. We've had a bunch of guys with a bunch of yards, nothing outstanding. Nobody has that 100 carries, and that's less than 10 carries a game. But we've got a bunch of different guys that can take it to the house any time." Wollum, a senior, and junior Cohen Camus have rotated duties as quarterback. "It's by series back and forth," Whitman said. "We kind of go with who's rolling. If one of them kind of is rolling, we'll stick with him. They each get 2 series in the first half, maybe 3. Then we'll see where we're at. Quite honestly, it depends on what the defense is giving us." Speaking of defense, Whitman said that was his team's strength in the regular season. Lisbon gave up just 8.25 points per game with a pair of shutouts. Again, back to the team theme there, as a dozen players recorded between 10.5 and 39.5 tackles, a 3-4 set has good athletic outside linebackers that help funnel opposing ball carriers to good middle linebackers Cole and Moore. "I think our defense has played pretty solid ball," Whitman said. "We've got a lot of speed on the defensive side of the ball, and that plays to our strength. We try to put pressure on offenses up front, and we've got some really athletic D linemen, our 3-down D linemen. Then we bring some athletic outside linebackers pretty consistently from the outside that are 2 of our better athletes on the team. I think we have a pretty darn good athlete, too. We try to funnel everything to the middle, to what I call our thumpers, Cole and Moore, who are pretty solid." Lisbon lost its season opener way back in August to Class 1A playoff qualifier West Branch 12-6. It's been nothing but victories since then. The Lions went 6-0 to claim the District 5 championship. Wapello finished second at 5-1, Alburn at third at 4-2, with all three of them qualifying for the playoffs as a result. Turning now to the living page, Historic Hideaway is the title of this article by Elijah Desius. New Bohemia Fire Station finds new life as an Airbnb. The old fire station at 1111 3rd Street Southeast is starting a new chapter after a storied history in the New Bohemia District. Since it retired from its original purpose in the late 1950s, the 1916 building has housed several businesses: an accountant's office, Lynn Novelty Company, a tattoo parlor, and an adult bookstore, plus a private residence. Through good times and bad, the structure has managed to weather two major floods and the derecho. Now it opens its doors to visitors hoping to rent the piece of history through Airbnb. "It's great to have this history to restore and really use it," said Mary K. McGrath, who purchased the building with sister-in-law Sue Novak last October from nonprofit arts organization CSPS. "People get to stay here and really experience it," Novak said. The building is McGrath's third Airbnb managed by Novak. Since they listed it in June on the popular site for travelers, opting to rent homes instead of staying in a hotel, they have only had one weekend unbooked. For $139 on a weeknight or $149 on a weekend, visitors can experience the building's character from a time when firefighting was a splintered private venture rather than a publicly funded one. Inside the small building, the devil is in the details. Past the picturesque front doors, a hallway created in a vintage style with reclaimed materials makes a separate entrance for renters to go up the narrow staircase to their apartment. On the lower level, Scribe Stationer will soon open as a stationery and gift shop. Upstairs, about 800 square feet, houses a small kitchen and eating area, living area, full bathroom, and a bedroom. Here, four firemen lived and slept in bunk beds. In the bathroom, you'll find a remnant of their presence with four separate closets for each firefighter. Around the apartment, curated historical finds from flea markets and garage sales, such as antique copper fire extinguishers, set the scene. Most of the apartment has been unaltered from its original cosmetic state, showcasing the original features of the house. "Cosmetically, we haven't done much," Novak said. "We wanted to preserve it as much as possible." In addition to structural fixes, Novak and McGrath have fixed up parts of the original doors and added vintage-looking covers to the radiators, as well as themed decorations. "Now I'm addicted to it," Novak said. "I'm always looking for fire stuff." A photo of another historical CSPS building around the corner in Newbo, the Bohemian American Hose Company, fills the walls behind the bed, showing the firefighting horses that would have been fed just behind the house. Another print on the opposite wall shows the original wooden structure that was in place for about 15 years, before the current brick building was constructed. A hole in the floor, where firefighters slid down a pole to the lower level, remains, covered by the sofa on the upper level. The pole was removed in the 1940s, Novak said. Original windows reflect the manufacturing standards of the time, with waves and imperfections in the street-facing panes. Most of the floors and lights are original. Soon the owners hope to curate the firefighters' personal closets in the bathroom into a mini-museum with a curated selection of artifacts and memorabilia. Before a fire department was an official part of Cedar Rapids city government, all firefighting services were conducted by competing groups of volunteers, according to longtime Cedar Rapids historian Mark Stopher Hunter. At one point in the late 1800s, there were almost a dozen private firefighting companies in the city. This brick building's construction, a replacement of the former wood frame, was one of six built between 1906 and 1926, signaling the permanency of firefighting services. Five of the six brick structures still stand, One was demolished in 1997. They made the fire stations official, Stopher Hunter said. The construction was that process of replacing a wood frame and sending a message to the public that your fire protection service in Cedar Rapids is permanent now. The site was chosen for a fire station in part because of its proximity to large factories, which had a tendency to run the largest fire risk at the time. At the end of 3rd Street was the Sinclair Meatpacking Plant. An old steel and iron factory stood where New Bow City Market is located today. The term hose company, as the front of the New Bow building still reads, was a predecessor for what was later called fire stations, representing the fact that they were a company of men appointed to bring and manage hose in the extension and extinguishing of fires, Stopher Hunter explained. Each hose company had formal names, indicative of the neighborhood they were in. The Bohemian American Hose Company, which operated out of nearby 219 11th Avenue Southeast, was the private predecessor to city-owned Hose Company No. 4, the fourth permanent fire station established by city government. When this 3rd Street Southeast building was established in 1916, the city was still using horse-drawn vehicles to fight fires. By the mid-1920s, the city shifted to motorized vehicles. It was still more cost-effective to use horses when this was built, Stopher Hunter said. The building was discontinued as a fire station along with another one at 404 17th Street Southeast in the late 50s, shortly after a new Southeast Quadrant fire station opened on Mount Vernon Road Southeast, with a central fire station at 427 1st Street Southeast. Hose Company No. 4 now became redundant. As factories, a slaughterhouse, and job sources dried up in the 80s up to 1990, the area became economically depressed. For a period of time after, retail dried up too. Stopher Hunter said the city made plans to tear down the neighborhood and rebuild more than once in the 1960s. Those attempts were renewed after the flood of 2008. Nobody really invested in that neighborhood until the 60s, but nobody tore down much of anything either, so everything stayed frozen in time, he said. Buildings like this fire station had to ride the wave and wait for better times. And until better times came along, it took whatever tenant it could get. McGrath started her property business 3 years ago by just wanting to own one building. A lifelong Cedar Rapids resident, she wanted to restore the vigor of the Czech village she grew up near as she watched it start to get run down. I wanted to preserve buildings and give them new life and bring back the hustle bustle of the Czech village that used to be there years ago, she said. She said she started with commissioning the opening of a cafe, useful as a social institution for gathering, which resulted in Café St. Pio on the corner of 16th Avenue Southwest and C Street. After her first building purchase, she quickly realized that the nature of her mission was a package deal. I had to buy them all, said McGrath, 66. For me, it's been a labor of love. I love old buildings and preserving them. Though her mission was no accident, she calls herself an accidental landlord with a purpose. McGrath and Novak call it an honor to be stewards in preserving the history of the former fire station in New Bow as a new flame of life is ignited in the building. And here are some things to do today. Dance category, Shen Yu. Discover the extraordinary vitality of one of the world's oldest art forms, classical Chinese dance, and its remarkable pageantry. That's appearing today at 7:30 at the Paramount Theater. Cost is $83 to $123. And family-friendly Boo at the Barn. There will be an early access hour from noon to 1 p.m. for those with sensory sensitivities. Enjoy lots of spooktacular fun with the Miracles team and their miraculous herd of horses. Activities will include games, treats, and other fun. Again, that's Miracles in Motion Therapeutic Equestrian Center, noon to 3:30 today, 2049 120th Street Northwest in Swisher, and that is free. In the music category, Licorice Shtick Red Cedar Chamber Music presents a program of works by living composers at the First Presbyterian Church, 310 5th Street Southeast, 7 p.m. today. Cost is $10 to $20. In the comedy category, comedian Tony Deo, who has appeared on Conan, The Late Late Show, makes his Marion debut at the Giving Tree Theater, 752 10th Street in Marion, 7 or 9:15 p.m. today. Tickets are $20 or $23 at the door. And Holiday Trunk or Treat 2021, an afternoon of Halloween fun at Good Shepherd Evangelical Lutheran Church, 2942nd Street Northeast in Cedar Rapids, from 3 to 5 p.m. today. That's free. In the film category, Frightening Friday's Extra. It's not Friday, but there will be an extra flick today. Come watch The Poltergeist on the Yard at the New Bow Market, 1100 3rd Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids, 6:45 to 9 p.m. today, and that's free. And finally, in the lecture area, an evening with Richard Norton Smith. Enjoy dinner, followed by a program presented by Richard Norton Smith, a nationally acclaimed presidential historian and biographer. He served as director of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum from 1988 to 1993, and then as director for the Eisenhower, Reagan, and Ford Libraries until 2001. That takes place today at Brown Deer Golf Club, 1900 Country Club Drive in Coralville. Cost is $50 to $65, and that's from 6 to 9 p.m. today. We'll wrap things up with the weather. Looking for mostly sunny skies today with a high of 56 and a low of 41 in Cedar Rapids, a high of 58 and a low of 42 for Iowa City. Looks like we're in for some showers tomorrow, Sunday, and again on Monday. Cedar Rapids, a high of 49 and a low of 44. Iowa City, a high of 55 tomorrow and a low of 43. Normally, our high is 61 and low of 40. The record high of 88 degrees was set in 1899. The record low of 19 was set in 1981. We're in the full moon phase, moon rise at 7:56 p.m. and moon set at 11:25 a.m. Sunset tonight is at 6:13, sunrise tomorrow at 7:30, giving us 10 hours and 45 minutes of daylight. September's been interesting, according to meteorologist Kai O'Meara, as has October, in that there haven't been drastic temperature changes from day to day. Sure, we've had some cooler days here or there, but they have largely been very pleasant. Typical ups and downs of fall are starting. This past weekend, it was a bit cooler. Then we warmed up from Sunday through Wednesday, and it's been falling ever since. Typically, 3 to 4 day cycles is very typical in the upper Midwest for October as systems move across the United States. This weekend is looking chilly and likely going to be the coolest since spring. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It's Saturday, October 23. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening and have a great, safe day.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Previously, we talked about how scientists discovered the asteroid that brought down the dinosaurs. But what exactly happened when a rock twice the size of Manhattan smashed into our planet with a force of 10 billion atomic bombs? It punched a hole in Earth's crust 50 miles wide and 20 miles deep, causing nearly a million cubic miles of solid rock to behave like liquid. Like when a rock lands in a pond, the sides of the crater splashed outward, up, then collapsed. The center of the crater rebounded, rocketing up higher than Mount Everest, then it too collapsed. Earth's crust rippled like the surface of water. A ring of ridges spread out from the impact site. This giant splash on Earth's surface happened in a matter of minutes. Then the rocks froze into their new positions and were protected from erosion by layers of marine sediment. A 2016 mission drilled into the ridges circling the crater floor. The explorers found large sections of melted rock. Below that, they found granite so badly pulverized that they were less dense than normal granite. And as often happens in science, one insight leads to another. A recent space mission had discovered that the moon's crust is less dense than it should be, and scientists wondered why. The crater on Earth suggests it's due to 4 billion years of impacts on the moon's famously cratered surface. I'm Scott Tinker, bringing you impactful insights on Earth Date.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.